You're listening to a podcast of spurious morality.
Hello and welcome to a podcast of spurious morality. I'm Johnston, and with me again this week I have Mansour. Hello.
Hello.
And we've done it. We've done the whole season. This is it. We're going to talk about the reality war, the season finale. So we have covered, for the first time, it's the first time this podcast has done this, we have covered the entire series on a week-by-week basis as released. So that's quite good. I feel like it's an achievement, and I'm actually quite surprised it's taken us three series of Spodcasts to do this. But I've enjoyed doing it. I've enjoyed going over this series, and it's sort of kept me more engaged with this series than I think I was with last year's. You know, last year, Connor and I did sort of two episodes. So we did the first half in one episode and the second half in the next, and we didn't quite get to do the whole speculation thing that we've done here and that kind of thing, so it's been quite enjoyable. So we'll dive straight in. The reality war, a lot goes on in this, and the one thing I've seen a lot of people say is it's nothing like what they were expecting, and I think I'm on that list of people. I've spoken over the last few weeks about things we're expecting to see, expecting to happen, how's everything going to be squeezed into one episode, all of this kind of thing. And actually, the reality war kind of got things over and done with as quickly as it could, and then just took a bit of time to breathe. It gave us a chance to say goodbye to Belinda and say goodbye to this doctor, because we got something that I've been saying I'd like to see ever since 2005, which is a more or less surprise regeneration. You know, it wasn't announced. We didn't know that somebody was going to appear. Somebody else was going to appear at the end of the episode as maybe the new Doctor. It just kind of happened. And I really did like that. I really, really like the way this was handled, because it's always a big sort of news story when we get a regeneration. You know, it's the actor announces the leaving, we go through this whole process of who's going to be the next Doctor, there's all the random guesses from the bookies, all the same names get sort of thrown up and thrown about, and the bookies kind of settle on somebody a few days before, and they are inevitably right. And that seems to have happened, I think, ever since Matt Smith was announced. So it's quite nice to have that surprise here. So I'm kind of jumping towards the end of the episode because, you know, the big talking point is the fact it was a regeneration story. I get the impression that regeneration story is maybe not what it started life as. I think we know there were some reshoots. We know that maybe the ending to this episode wasn't the one as originally planned. And there do seem to be some things that have kind of just been left. Like, for example, Susan never made the appearance that we were all expecting and speculating about. And I even last week said, I think we need to give a good chunk of the episode over to Susan returning. And it just didn't happen. And I hope that that is something that's picked up. I really do hope that, you know, moving forward, we do get something with Susan, because it seems strange to have Carol Ann Ford in to do what she did in Interstellar Song Contest. And then she, you know, popped up a tiny little bit in Wishworld. And then, obviously, the reality war had to go in a totally different direction, because at some point, we've realised that we need a new doctor, and we need it to be a regeneration story. Overall, considering how packed it was, I thought it was a pretty good episode. I think on the whole, it was a decent episode. I think there are things within that episode that I'm not too keen on, and the sort of rushed, strange last 15 minutes that sort of felt disconnected from everything else. And like I say, I suspect the original plan felt a bit jarring, and it's a real shame to see Shooty go. He's been a fantastic doctor. I could talk for hours about that. But ultimately, the episode as a whole, for the most part, did what I wanted it to. Could have done something more interesting with Omega, because Omega's a far more interesting character than the way he was portrayed in this, which was basically a big CGI claw and face. But I think that's kind of made up for by the fact that we've had some really good Rani stuff. Like, I like both the incarnations of the Rani, and I liked them even more in this episode than I did in Wishworld. It was, you know, good to see them have that confrontation with the Doctor, and, you know, we definitely got a good look into the Rani's character, and, you know, how she just sees the universe as one big experiment, and morals don't matter, and all that kind of thing. So there was quite a bit for this episode to explore, and I think it did a lot of that stuff very, very well. We're going to go into specifics after this, because there's quite a few specifics to go into, but Mansour, what were your sort of overall thoughts? Which I appreciate is a easier question to ask than it is to answer about this kind of episode.
It was sort of kind like what I was expecting, I think, because I went into it with the knowledge of rumours about behind the scenes issues and like late in the day reshoots, and maybe that sort of primes you to look out for these things. But I can't think of, off the top of my head, another example of any TV Doctor Who story where like that seems like the effects of that seem so obvious. And there's two layers to it, because, and this is speculation, but it seems to me that at the point at which Poppy disappears, around there, like everything after that seems to have been swapped in or added in quite late in the day, because we saw publicity stills for scenes that are not in the finished episode. But then there's another layer before that, which is, I think, one of my issues with the whole season, looking back, is the speculation, again, not confirmed at all, that Belinda was swapped in for Ruby in season two. And having seen this last episode, that seems more and more likely to me. Yeah, we'll get into specifics about, you know, the ending and specific moments, but like Ruby is the one who has all the big hero moments in this episode, and Belinda is literally shut away in a box for part of it, and for like a really crucial part of it. And yeah, and it makes me a bit disappointed that like we didn't get more with her character over this whole season. Having said that, it's with both of those two big potential adjustments that they had to make, it does a reasonable job. There's like, there are things I liked about it. Like there's some really good visuals. Like you said, the Rani, both versions of the Rani were very good. And yeah, there were good moments. Oh, actually, I did like Conrad's story and how that was wrapped up. But yeah, when we get into the specifics of that, I thought there were some like potentially missed opportunities there as well to wrap up some other threads relating to the Doctor. So yeah, there was some stuff to like, but maybe I was primed to look out for it. But the joins and the adjustments behind the scenes just seemed really, really obvious to me with this one.
Yeah, it's, you do sort of have to ask, is this the most, is this the story of from the New Who era with the most sort of obvious behind the scenes struggles? Like, I know we've had episodes that have had a pretty difficult recording and there's been little errors here and there and that kind of thing, but is this the one where it shows the most? But then again, is that just because it's actually a big regeneration story and was never meant to be?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things, because I feel like this season was written as the beginnings of the arc for this Doctor. All that stuff that was like so out of character with that moment of torturing Kid in Interstellar Song Contest, that's just been left. Whereas if this was like, you know, his middle season or second out of four seasons, I can see how there would be an arc about him going further down that road and maybe the companion pulling him back, or Susan coming in and being a bigger part of the story and pulling him back, or like a moment of hubris where he just goes too far and that kind of like the end of time leads to the regeneration. But it really, really feels like that story was starting to be told and then it was just cut short in and right in the middle, basically.
Yeah, I mean, not every other Doctor we've had, but the majority of New Who Doctors have done three seasons. And actually, I don't think any of them have been properly set up for a three-season arc. I don't think any of them, you know, okay, Jodie Whittaker's arc sort of started to get going in her second season and never quite fully came to fruition because of COVID and Flux being cut down as a result and, you know, made under restrictions, all this kind of thing. But yeah, you're right. It feels as though we were starting to figure out what we were doing with this Doctor, where he was going to go. And I do think that one more season, we'd have probably seen it through. We'd have got everything that we...
Yeah, could have been a three-year story. That's what it felt like to me. But like, I think like looking back at the post-2005 Doctors, I think 9, 10, 12, and then also like the kind of Mayfly ones, like the War Doctor and the 14th, I think all of those have got a coherent, compelling character arc. It's not that I don't like the other Doctors, but I think 11, definitely 13 with the sort of COVID disruption, and then now 15 with this behind the scenes pivot potentially, I don't think they were as well served with kind of telling a coherent story over their eras. And that's not essential, because like classic Doctors didn't always have that, or they had it in very subtle ways. Like, you know, Tom Baker just kind of changed like the sort of tone and performance. There wasn't any great sort of explicit arc or story going on across the whole thing. But I think the thing that makes it stick out with the 15th is that they were making steps, like quite deliberate steps, to start that story, and then it got stopped short.
Which is definitely a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't help but think that this era is always going to feel a bit incomplete as a result. Like, we've definitely got a Doctor gone too soon. And funnily enough, it feels like we don't know him as well as we knew the Ninth Doctor when he left in Parting of the Ways.
That's really interesting, because like we know now quite, Christopher Eccleston's talked about it quite openly, that there was a lot of tension and issues behind the scenes with that season. Yet you watch that back and it looks like it was always written to be this like really compelling one season arc for the Doctor.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that they couldn't adjust and bring things together in the same way this time round.
Yeah, it's the Ninth Doctor's era was obviously cut off early, but they knew it was happening and
they had more
the
time,
whole season maybe. Kind of built towards it.
Yeah.
Whereas this really does feel like someone's gone, oh crap, we need to do a regeneration now, quick, tack it on the end. Which is such a shame. I would love to know what happened originally. And we know it exists. You know, there must have been a more or less complete version of this episode as it should have been before they had to turn it into a regeneration story.
And it seems like very late in the day because I think it was Disney Plus in Germany, but the fact that production stills from an unused ending are out there in the public,
yeah,
that to me says that this was like really down to the wire in terms of swapping things out.
Yeah. Oh, well, all we can do is wait. One day we'll find out more. It's now my sort of second most, I want to know what was going on originally after Rogue One. I still want to see the original version of Rogue One before other issues happen there for different reasons, of course. But I'm very curious to know what was actually meant to happen in this episode. And, you know, it's safe to assume that Susan was meant to be part of it, I think.
I've seen, again, like nothing confirmed, but I've heard a lot of YouTubers and reviewers repeating rumours about there was this party at the end. That's what we see in the production stills. Poppy was going to have disappeared, but then you see everyone celebrating and Susan standing off to the side with Poppy. Now, in some versions I've heard it's just Susan, and other versions it's Susan with Poppy and it's sort of setting up her coming back in a following season. And there was that behind the scenes interview with Carol Ann Ford, where either she's just has a very Doctor Who like wardrobe at home, or she was in costume for different scenes that we didn't see in Interstellar.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure she filmed something else. And there was Belinda's dad, whose agency posted stuff online saying, you know, our client's in Doctor Who, and then he was nowhere to be seen in this episode.
Scenes were cut.
Yeah, I'm guessing he was at the party that doesn't exist now.
Yeah, maybe one day we'll find out. I hope we do. It sounds like a sort of fantastic, curious episode that never happened.
Well, I wonder, it's not beyond possibility for the original script to be uploaded because it might be this is just a thing of there was no major falling out between individuals. It was just shooting up. I wanted to progress with his career and he didn't want to hold on indefinitely for Disney to possibly not renew. If that's the case and it all ended amicably, then maybe we will see the original shooting scripts uploaded in the next few months.
It'd be very interesting if they were. Fingers crossed, it's something I'd certainly like to have a look at and talk about in the future.
Yeah, or maybe the book will cover.
Well, yeah.
Cover the other timeline.
The Writer's Tale 2.
But I was thinking of the Target style novelization.
Oh, of course, yes. Ah, right. Yes, also a possibility. So, of course, another, I think, victim of this big cut, reshoot, change, whatever, is Belinda's departure. Like, you know, I get the impression that maybe that wasn't as originally planned and, you know, her timeline was entirely changed as a result of the episode. And it was, I mean, it was a nice way to write a Doctor Who companion out. You know, it worked. It was a very Doctor Who-y way for a character to go. But at the same time, A, it's a real shame for this character to go. B, I'm very, very annoyed that she spent a chunk of the last episode literally shut up in a box. All for no reason as well, I'll hastily add. And the thing I'm always going to say about Belinda is I wish we'd got more. I really do. And I absolutely loved sort of that scene in the TARDIS with the Doctor, Belinda and Ruby. And it just made me think, God, we could have had a series of that. That would have been amazing. That would have been absolutely fantastic if we'd have had the three of them properly travelling together.
Yeah, and that maybe if there was going to be a season three with this Doctor, that would have been the way to go to actually do Belinda justice in an additional season. I didn't like the way she was used here at all. Like the stuff you mentioned about she's put in a box, but then when she comes out of the box, it's played as an unambiguously happy ending. Like, you know, the universe is, if I'm understanding it right, the universe has shifted, and if where she didn't have a child before, she now has a child who happens to look exactly like Poppy, the space baby. Although I've seen different interpretations of it saying that she did always have a baby called Poppy, but I don't understand that at all, because it is the wish world that created Poppy in the first place, isn't it? That's where she came from. The version of Poppy that we... Well, there's two versions of Poppy we see, aren't there? Three. There's the original Space Babies one. There's the Wish World version, who's half Time Lord. And then there's the post-shifted universe version, who's 100% human. And
yeah,
as far as I can understand it, Belinda, when we saw her in the Robot Revolution, did not have a child in that version of the universe. So if that's the case, I just find it a bit weird that the Doctor's made that decision. Like, this whole era started with the 14th Doctor and Donna, and it wasn't the sole reason they got those two, you know, very popular actors back into Doctor Who, but one of the reasons for bringing Donna back as a character was to fix some of the issues with her exit, and, you know, the stuff about, like, her not choosing what the Doctor did to her in the last moments of Journey's End. And it just seemed really weird to me that you then end this new era with the Doctor choosing to change the companion's life and make her a mother when she didn't choose that. And I know it's complicated, because Wishworld Belinda would have chosen that. But there's nothing to say that the original Robot Revolution version of Belinda would have chosen this life.
No.
Yeah, and I didn't. That just felt really weird to me. And she has that moment at the end of Robot Revolution where she has that really good moment of, like, setting boundaries and saying, you know, don't scan me without my consent. And I think there's a moment in this episode where the Doctor just scans Poppy without asking, and it just seems to, like, throw out all of that really interesting stuff about companion who, you know, setting boundaries and making choices of her own, and instead the Doctor's kind of done what Conrad was doing in a different way and just, like, chosen for her and said, oh no, your happy ending is being a mother. Which, you know, yeah, might be a really happy life for her, but it's not what she chose.
Yeah, it's definitely odd. And, you know, when consent is set up as being something so important to this character.
Exactly, they bring it up.
Yeah.
If you didn't bring it up, you could maybe fudge it, but it's...
Yeah, it's literally part of how this character is established.
Yeah.
I really do think we've just not got the character we should have had out of Belinda, and I think it's a shame that her exit did sort of get wrapped up in everything else that had to be done in this episode, because she started off so well. Like, the first three episodes, she is such a fantastic character, a fantastic companion. And ever since then, we've had stories that she's barely in, that she's not an important part of, or, as you have sort of speculated and kind of convinced me of, really, she was just a replacement last minute for Ruby. Yeah, it's a real shame, because I really wish we'd have got more out of Belinda, because the setup was so good. There was so much promise there. We really were on for a great companion in those first few episodes, and all of it just seemed to fall by the wayside as the series went on.
Well, like, one or the other, like, if you're going to bring her in, then rework it. And I'm saying this as though it's easier and understand, like, you know, they might have been working around a load of different budgetary and time constraints to make this happen. But ideally, if you're going to make that swap, then rework the season so that it tells a better story for her. Or you know, it would have been, and again, we don't know why it might have happened, but there might have been a better version of season two where Ruby did stick around. Because you have that line in Space Babies that seems to directly set up Wish World, where the Doctor says to Poppy, you know, we're not your parents, but I wish we were. And he's talking about him and Ruby. So that's not addressed at all. Whereas I think if Ruby was still the main companion in season two, you would have had a big flashback to that line to sort of underscore, oh, something's rippled back in time and that wish has become real. But I don't think we heard that line again in flashbacks this week.
No, I certainly don't recall it. Yeah, it's a shame that it's the way it's gone, because I really do think, you know, we had a fantastic actor, we had a good character, and we've just not quite seen the potential. And I promise this is the last time I'll grumble about it. You're not going to get everything you want out of a character in an 8-episode season. Like, a companion should not be around for 8 episodes and then that's it. It just doesn't work. These are characters that we're supposed to travel with and learn about and, you know, become fond of. And then when you do get an exit, it becomes more meaningful. And it just doesn't feel like any of the impact they're supposed to have been with this episode was earned with Belinda.
I've seen it said, and I agree, that actually Ruby almost had more development this year than Belinda did. I think Belinda had, like you said, a great introduction and was really promising at the start in terms of just the performance and the character. But Ruby had Lucky Day, and then Ruby had the really important big hero moments in this episode. And like, off the top of my head, I can't think of Belinda getting... We didn't have a Dr. Light where Belinda got to take centre stage like we did with 73 Yards and Lucky Day. So she didn't get that opportunity. Or did we? Did we have anything where the Doctor wasn't as present?
Not really. 5 minutes of Interstellar Song Contest.
So she didn't get the chance to kind of take centre stage in the way that Ruby has done in 2 episodes across the seasons. And yeah, like we've already said, it's such a contrast with her just being literally locked away. And then Ruby is playing that really pivotal role of teleporting in and taking on Conrad.
I certainly hope we do see more of Ruby, because otherwise she just got abandoned and forgotten.
Oh, that was probably a factor of the reshoots.
Totally, yeah. But
it was almost like a bit back to front, because I thought season one was a bit overplayed in terms of how big a deal the departure was. It was almost like doomsday levels of trauma, but they weren't being ripped apart. It was, she's got a family that she wants to spend a bit of time with. You know, just take the TARDIS forward a few months. What's the problem? And then this episode was the opposite of like, oh, okay, it's the end of the era, and there's not even a moment to say goodbye to Ruby.
With any luck, Ruby is now part of this sort of extended unit. Group of unit characters. Yeah. Like, you know, we can have her recurring in the same way we have Kate and Mel and all of the others, you know, Shirley, and hopefully that's where it's going to go. If that's Ruby's final scene, it would be such a shame. It really would.
We talked a lot about problems and issues, but like you mentioned, like seeing the three of them together in the TARDIS. I liked that scene for another reason, which was the folding of the jacket. I think that is one of the, that's like one of the most kind of sort of emotional, like poetic moments that they've been in Doctor Who. And it was like, it's like, I would have liked a more coherent story with Russell T. Davis adding that sort of depth and emotion to things. And if we were going to do this huge sweeping arc about the gods, then that sort of, that type of magical realism where reality's bending a little bit and you're using it to tell stories about what emotions people are going through, then yeah, I would have liked more than that, more of that and less of like giant skeleton versions of Omega.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely. And it feels like there's an awful lot of surface level stuff, and I don't think really we'll ever know how much of that is through necessity and how much of that is through what was actually there on the page to start with.
Yeah.
The whole God storyline, where do we stand with that now? I like, nothing feels resolved, nothing even feels paused for the end of a season. I'm just very curious as to,
I think it's wrapped up. Yeah. Like, again, maybe it was wrapped up a year earlier than intended, and maybe that's why it doesn't feel complete. But I think, I'm trying to think of anything that confirms it directly, but the impression I came away from it was that, like, that magic stuff has been put away. Well, because he said no more wishes, that seemed to be drawing a line under all of the sort of magic gods-related stuff that was going on.
We'll see moving forward anyway, but it kind of feels like there should have been more to it than that. There's still references to the boss. The boss of the hotel, is that the same as the Meeps boss that was mentioned way back when in the Star Beast? And, you know, there are hanging story threads. There are things there that need resolving. Like, you know, is Mavity ever going to go anywhere?
Well, the other big one is Rogue, which it seems, that again seems like something that was cut short. That seems obvious for, like, in season three, there would have been an episode with the Doctor saving him or them reuniting. It just,
Which could still happen.
With a different Doctor, but it's, yeah, that feels really incomplete to me as well, that you would make such a big deal of their relationship and then it's like, and to bring him back in for that little green screen appearance on the TV as well, it's almost like, would it have been better to have taken that out rather than draw attention to the fact that thread was left dangling?
You could argue, would it have been better to take Susan out of Interstellar Song Contest as well?
Yeah, or at least not bring her back for the little flashbacks in Wishworld, and, you know, have replaced both Rogue and Susan in Wishworld at least, so that you're not bringing them both up again.
Yeah, it's almost like a reminder of unfinished storylines. Yeah, like, this is happening still, by the way. Yeah. I hope there is some clarity on the show's future, what's going on, what the deal with Billy Piper, and we haven't discussed Billy Piper yet. What's the deal there? Because everything that's happened so far seems to have gone out of its way to not confirm that Billy Piper is playing the Doctor. At the end, it was introducing Billy Piper, and the press release is all, you know, it never mentions Billy Piper as the Doctor. It just says Billy Piper is back. And there's a line about, is it, you know, one last trip in the TARDIS or something like that. So, you know, again, this feels like it's setting something else up, but this is going to be solved fairly short term. I think we're getting a Christmas special maybe at some point, Billy Piper. I don't know. That's my guess.
Next year, though, like, unless... Do you think they'll be able to film something for this year?
It's possible? Yes. But it would have to happen very, very, very flipping soon. Surely. I really don't know what's happening with that. It feels like everything feels like it's left in a very, very funny place at the moment. And all along, I've been going, all of these rumours of cancellation, blah, 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 are a load of nonsense. And right now it's sort of, well, no, I don't think it's cancelled. I think we're going to get more Doctor Who, and I think we're going to get more Doctor Who relatively soon, maybe a year or two. But we're in this just odd limbo where we've got a Doctor who no one actually wants to say is the Doctor. We've had a very, very strange, I don't want to say botched ending to Chuty's era, but certainly not a smooth ending. I think, yeah, we need something. Like, I think we need more Doctor Who as soon as possible, just to kind of convince casual viewers, whatever you want to say, that no, this isn't an absolute mess and it is going somewhere.
Or we need like new adventures to freshen the franchise up and get it out of a rut by trying new and different things. But I think the problem is that won't happen because we have Big Finish is like for the last 20 odd years kind of being in the sort of forefront of extended universe stuff. So if it does go off of TV, people are going to look to Big Finish first before, a niche series of novels.
And at the end of the day, Big Finish is really starting to fire up the idea of ongoing series again. You know, we've not had much in the way of ongoing series from Big Finish, really, you know, the monthly range ending and that kind of thing. But we're getting bi-monthly 13th Doctor and 9th Doctor series coming up. You know, we're getting Jodie Whittaker at Big Finish at long last. It's not taken that long, but at long last. And we're getting the 9th Doctor and Rose together.
So she might be playing, or she might have stories of her playing Rose being released while she's filming stories as the Doctor.
If that's what she is. Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting.
I wonder if like they've danced around naming her as the Doctor just as a kind of, just like as a safety mechanism. Like maybe she's not contracted to do anything specific because they don't have anything confirmed. So is it as simple as that? It's just like dancing around it a little bit because she is not contracted to be the Doctor in any upcoming stories at the moment.
Yeah, was it just a case of, Billy, will you come and stand in front of a green screen for us? It'll make an amazing shot at the end of an episode.
I think because of how late it was, it feels like it was pretty much that. It was like, who will be a familiar face? Who isn't David Tennant again? Who will be able to come in and just do that moment?
I have to admit, having heard rumours that there was going to be a regeneration, I'm still calling it a surprise regeneration. It wasn't officially announced in any way. But having heard the rumours, expecting it and all this kind of thing, I kind of hoped they'd go with Joe Martin. How good would that have been?
Yeah, which would have linked up with her line about her story being told or being finished one day in the story in the engine. That would have been a really nice link, even if it was just a special with her. But I think that would have made sense in terms of it would have been nice. But I feel like they were also, with the renewal being uncertain, they're also thinking about what is going to grab the most attention, what's going to make the news. And sadly, I think like Billie Piper, who's you know, an amazing actor, she's going to get more space in news headlines than Joe Martin is.
Yeah, very true. It does kind of make me slightly worried that we're going to fall into this phase of every time it looks like Doctor Who's in trouble, we are going to bring back somebody from the David Tennant era.
Well, the 15th is like bookended by David Tennant and Billy Piper.
But yeah, are we just reusing an old trick here? I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, it's kind of unreasonable to speculate at this point because all we have had is 2 seconds at the end of an episode.
Yeah.
We'll see. Well, just a few other points to kind of fire through. I don't know about you, but my highlight, absolute highlight of this episode was Jodie Whittaker's appearance. I thought that was absolutely wonderful. Like, she just came in, she gave it all the energy in the world. I honestly think it was her 5 best minutes as the Doctor, and it really makes me wish she'd have stuck around and done a season with Russell T. Davis or something, because she was just fantastic. And for the first time ever, I thought, wow, I actually really miss this Doctor. I really do. And it's really set me up for Big Finish next month.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to her. Yeah. Like, I feel like she could be like Colin Baker levels of like being given the chance to do stuff on audio that she didn't get the chance to do on TV. Like that moment was a bit, it's kind of like, if you're looking at it objectively, you could say it's a bit unnecessary, like to just throw that in. She could have been like a hologram, or it could have been just like some other thing that prompts him to take action. But I didn't mind it because of that, exactly what you said, of like how good it was to see her. And I think the attention to detail as well, like I think the music gets a bit more synthy as she comes in, so it's mimicking that Sega Nakanola style of music when she's walking down the platform. And it was just great to see her, and you're right, it would have been amazing to have had like at least a few specials with her, because I don't think we ever have had that, have we? Because doctors tend to go with their showrunners.
Yeah.
There's not been any overlap in post-2005.
No, there hasn't at all.
Yeah. The line I laughed out loud about with the line about Yaz, because of how accurate it was, but also like how sad it was that, and the way it was played was really nice as well. Like the way the 15th Doctor says, "Oh no, you never do." And it's kind of like playfully pointing out some of the missed opportunities, I think, in that era. In a gentle way. But it's, yeah, you look back at the 13th Doctor's era and you do think, yeah, how would have things been if they'd just been a bit braver with some of the decisions around all of that stuff?
Yeah, it kind of, when you look back at the 13th Doctor's era, it had so much going for it, and there's a lot of unrealised potential there. And I do think COVID is a big, big factor in this. But just the way it fell that we didn't get as many episodes as we should have done. And, you know, Legend of the Sea Devils, it's another one where it's quite clearly a bit of a troubled production where things didn't go the right way and changes were made last minute and all that kind of thing. We could have got so much more out of that era, and it's just kind of a shame that it went the way it did. But yeah, it was so good to see Jodie Whittaker's daughter again. And like I say, it made me realise I've actually missed this incarnation, and now I'm very, very excited about getting the further adventures with Big Finish. And I really hope that ends up being a great series.
Yeah. When you said like your favourite moment of the episode, my first thought though was the two Ronnies joke with Anita Dobson.
Do you know how long it took me to get that? It was like 2 days later. It was like on Monday. I just suddenly went, two Ronnies. Oh, bloody hell.
What did you think it meant in context then?
I thought it was just quoting the two Ronnies. I totally got that it was quoting two Ronnies.
Right.
But the whole two Ronnies thing, that's what took me 2 days. And I genuinely just went, oh, for God's sake, should have got that straight away. But it was brilliant. Yeah, it was. It was one of the best bits of the episode, even if I didn't get it first time.
It sort of excuses Mrs. Flood shifting into that, you know, conspicuously subservient mode for the last couple of episodes.
We knew what she was doing. She was always going to be the one that survived.
Yeah, it wasn't that, like, there wasn't a moment where she turned on the new Rani, though. We didn't get that. It was just she was saving herself after the other one had died.
Yeah, but she sort of very quickly grabbed the time ring and went, didn't she?
Yeah. I wonder if, again, just speculation, but like, I wonder if there could have been an opportunity to where she made a choice where the new Rani was being pulled away or was in danger, and she has a choice of to go for the time ring or to save her.
Yeah. Again, I wonder if more was meant to be made of that bit with Omega, and it ended up getting cut because we had to deal with other things later on. Because it all seemed to happen very quickly and sort of was very functional from a plot point of view.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Omega much, but like, I think, it felt like a rerun of SUTEK, of you take that classic character but turn them into like something where you're just using your CGI budget, which is kind of visually impressive and it's a scary moment, but it didn't. Yeah, I feel like at that point, why not just create a new monster or threat from the underverse? Like, maybe you're expecting Omega and then this different thing emerges. And it's kind of doubly weird because they've done the Rani in quite an authentic classic way that's echoing Kate O'Mara. And then they've done this odd take on Omega.
Like, I'm very, very glad that Anita Dobson's Rani got away. But it is another thing left hanging. Like, the Rani should always be out there. Like, the Master should always be out there. Or at least the possibility of the Master always being out there should be a thing. But you know, at least we dealt with Omega. Like, he's still back, locked in his tomb, underdimension, whatever it is.
Underverse, which is that the antimatter universe? It was not clear, but like the new Rani isn't necessarily dead though. It could be a Boba Fett situation where she is still alive.
I'm seeing a whole spin-off series that the Rani's barely in. But yeah, it's. I'm not sure we needed Omega for that. Like, even if you're bringing back a
just
villain
needed
from
a
the past,
threat, like,
there, but like, it could have been the Beast from Impossible Planet and Satan Pit. Why didn't we do that? That would have been better. That would have made more sense. Like, okay, it doesn't make sense that the Rani's trying to dig out the Beast, but in terms of villain that it could have been, that would have been a better option.
Yeah, or she's looking for Omega and she gets the Beast by accident, like something she's not expecting. But I mean, like with SUTEK, at least there was like that link to the God of Death, and he's changing the way he's operating, but there's some sort of thread that's following through. But Yeah, I feel like with Omega there wasn't even that thread. I know there's just that line. What's the line in the classic series about saying, you know, he should have been a god? So I suppose there's that. That's the connection.
I worshipped you as a hero. No, I shouldn't have been a hero. I should have been a god. That kind of thing.
So there's that. It's a bit tenuous, though.
Yeah, definitely. But I want more Rani. I want more Anita Dobson's Rani. I want her to get to be the evil one,
Did you prefer her to Archie Punjabi? Because, like, Archie Punjabi's one was much more in the vein of Kate O'Mara. Like, I feel like Mrs. Flood, again, this might be a retrospective thing, but I'm not convinced that she was always meant to be the Rani. I wonder if that was a retrospective thing that came in this year.
Yeah, some of her dialogue in the finale of series one isn't particularly Rani-ish.
Yeah.
Could have been referring to Omega, but I'm not convinced. No, we'll sort of park that one as we'll see. But I think Archie Punjabi was, like you say, she was the Kate O'Mara Rani. She was proper Rani, and absolutely fantastic. Did it really, really well. But I think the Anita Dobson Rani is the one that's perhaps got more interesting stories to tell moving forward, that kind of thing.
And I suppose, like, most of the time we've seen her in previous episodes, she's been playing a role or hiding, so maybe we haven't seen her being herself yet at all, because we've seen her playing a role and then, like, suddenly being subservient to this new Rani. So what's she like when she is actually just being herself?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to, and I hope we get that. I really do hope we get that, because there's well, at the very least, we know there's another Time Lord out there now. Even if it's just one, and even if it's the Rani, there's another Time Lord out there now, and that makes things more interesting. It's always more interesting when he's not quite the last of the Time Lords.
Well, there's the Master's Tooth as well. Sorry, the Toymaker's Tooth with the Master in it. That is another on the list of unresolved things.
We're going to have to do an episode about unresolved things sometime.
We could do Big Finish pitches for, like, how Big Finish would wrap up each of these unresolved threads.
Yes, tying off loose ends. Yep. Okay, well, we're sort of close to running out of time on this one, and there is sort of one thing that we should go into before we finish, really, which is, so this has been a series. The series is done. We've had our 8 episodes. What are your overall thoughts on the series? You know, can you pick a favourite episode? And are we walking away generally calling this one a winner, even if the ending was a little bit on the shaky side?
I think it's very similar to series one in that, because I wasn't as sold on the ending, it sort of artificially brings down the impression of the whole season. But it's exactly the same thing of, like, the middle had some really strong inventive stuff. I think, like, episodes 2 through 2, I'm trying to remember which was which. Yeah, I think 2 through 6 I really, really enjoyed. So 5 out of 7 episodes, and, you know, Robot Revolution was okay as well. Like, that's a pretty good hit rate.
Yeah, I'll take a series where sort of 3/4 of it are pretty damn strong.
Yeah. Do you think we should just abandon the concept of, like, big overblown finales? Would that, especially with this, like, you mentioned the episode count and how that restricts, like, what you can do and how much you can develop characters. Maybe it would help to not feel that obligation to take up 1/4 of your episode count with a finale, or just do, like, a more low-key single episode finale.
I'm going to say no, because I thought The Legend of Ruby Sunday was absolutely fantastic, and you'd never have had that as an episode on its own. It had to be building up to something to work. And B, the giggle. I still think the giggle's brilliant. And yeah, it is, really it's like a, okay, it's episode 3, but it's still a big RTD finale.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really like the giggle. Like, I still feel like, I think we said this with the Series 1 retrospective, I think those three Tenant specials feel like so much more like nicely structured and coherent to me than like the sort of ups and downs of Series 1 and 2, or Season 1 and 2.
But I think the main thing that helped those was the fact that the two leads were already established. We've known and loved the Doctor, well, the 10th Doctor, 14th Doctor, David Tennant's Doctor, and Donna. We've known and loved them for 15 years, more than 15 years. So it was really easy to do those three episodes because you didn't have to make your audience care about those characters, because that work had already been done in a 13-episode series plus a load of specials.
I guess that's a factor, but there was... It's strange, though, because we talked about the three 60th anniversary specials as almost being like a speed run of an old 13-episode series with, like, you know, your lighter opening, the weird one in the middle, and then the big finale. But for some reason, that structure really worked as a trilogy. And for these two 8-episode seasons that we've had, something has just felt off to me about trying to squeeze the 13-episode structure into 8 episodes. And
yeah,
maybe this would have all worked better if it was just approached as a 16-episode series with like a mid-season break and a cliffhanger. Because these two seasons went out quite close together, like we relatively compared to some of the gaps we've had in the past, we weren't waiting a long time between season 1 and season 2.
Also, weren't they more or less recorded together?
Close together, at least, yeah. Like
yeah.
Yeah. So there was the potential to do that, and maybe, you know, they didn't want to. They just wanted to have like a really definitive line under series 1 to like generate buzz and impact. But yeah, I think using a 16-episode run to tell one big story might work better.
Yeah, and I think moving forward, that could well be the way to do it. It's in terms of story, character development, and so on, treat every two series as one series has been treated in the past.
Or Flux as well. Like I think Flux had issues with how it ended, but as a structure for Doctor Who, I think it worked really well. Like, just tell like one really tightly connected story week to week.
When you think about it, Dan had more or less the same number of episodes as Belinda, and we got to know him, or at least it felt like we got to know him a hell of a lot better.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And Russell T. Davies is like really good at like quite deftly and concisely giving you a sense of who characters are. So he can do it. It's just, again, maybe just the way that this character came about, maybe it made it more difficult this time. But like there's so many examples in the 2005 series of like moments with Rose and her mum, and even the little supporting characters you get in some of those early stories. Again, just like a few lines or a little moment is used to tell you something quite fundamental about them.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll always come back to that line about coleslaw from Jackie Tyler, won't it? You know, a bit clinical. That's brilliant, that. Fantastic line. Gives you so much about that character, and I love it. And stuff like that has been missing, it feels like. Yeah. Anyway, that's probably a good point to leave it. But overall, I'm calling it a good series. I think the finale has left me feeling a tiny bit underwhelmed. I think that's more of a circumstances that the finale ended up being made under than anything else thing. But, you know, there's an awful lot there to enjoy. And I'm probably doing that typical Doctor Who fan thing of just focusing on the bits I wasn't so keen on, because there were bits of it that I absolutely loved.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if we have a 17-year hiatus, but so I'm pretty sure it won't be as long as that again.
With any luck, we'll see Doctor Who within the next 15 years.
Yeah. Well, there was that line in an interview about, like, kids watching Newsround today will be the ones who bring it back in the future. So maybe it will be around then. But it's I hope it's not partly because of, I don't know if that ending on Billy Piper is as nice a full stop as 1989's moment in Survivor was, which wasn't intended to be the final story, but the final speech is tacked on, but I think it works amazingly. And the story as well is kind of like a thematic callback to, you know, going back to the Daleks and ideas about violence and whether it's right or not. And yeah, it just seemed like a really nice summing up of who the Doctor is and what the show is.
I think that's it. Instead of sort of thematically revisiting Rose, we've literally revisited Rose. And if it does end up being the way this era is wrapped up, then so be it, I guess.
Oh, and one thing we didn't talk about, speaking of violence, we didn't even get into the whole thing about the image of the Doctor saving the day by just shooting a giant gun.
Yeah. Which,
yeah, it's. I think, again, that might be part of the abandoned arc stuff, but yeah.
It's something the Doctor totally doesn't do until he does.
Yeah, which is okay, like, when it's kind of by exception, but for it to be such a fundamental big moment in the series finale and his final story, maybe it wasn't intended to be that. That didn't feel right to me, that you have that moment. And then you have Ruby counterpointing it by saving the day with compassion, like, at the same time.
Yeah, I definitely get the impression we were maybe heading into the Doctor's getting a bit too trigger-happy era.
Yeah. Exactly. Like,
if things had continued, as planned. Oh well, we don't know what's going to come next. Hopefully, there will be some indication sometime soon. I sincerely hope so, because I will always want there to be more Doctor Who. There's still loads of new Doctor Who content for us to enjoy, though. There's Big Finish. There's books. There's all sorts going on. So I guess it's just a case of sit back, wait and see. And meanwhile, this week we've had a pretty good Fourth Doctor Adventures set come out. So Doctor Who will carry on forever, maybe just not on telly.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there for this week anyway. But it's been absolutely fantastic talking about not just this episode, but this whole series with you, Mansour, kind of.
Yeah.
I found that, doing week by week has actually proved to be a pretty successful experiment, and I hope we get to do it again sometime soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
So thank you for joining me on it.
Yeah, no worries.
We'll be back for more Spodcasting next week. Goodbye now.